Hello? Hello? If you're still out there, and if we're still on the air, today is one of the most anticipated dates so far of the century, December 21st, 2012. 61 years ago, buttery-fingered moviegoers were imprinted with these images of the apocalypse.
When worlds collide. Written in the stars is a message of doom for this, our world. And now in the most shattering experience the screen has ever given you, Paramount tells what could happen within your lifetime when worlds collide. The United Nations meet in emergency session. All conflicts pale before this threat from another world.
I think all you scientists are crackpots. Nothing is going to happen.
When worlds collide, you'll see the most amazing, awe-inspiring scenes ever put on film. The forces of nature unleashed in all their terrifying force. Tremendous tidal waves smashing New York City. The molten fires from the bowels of the earth gushing out to consume our world.
When will the world end? And how? The Mayans were not the only ones with answers. And there's something about the Mayans that you probably didn't know. It's eat, drink, and be merry. I'm Frank Crystal. TU's students have given some thought about today.
Man, I've heard a little bit about 12-12-12. Man, I just know it's like because people think the world's going to end. But that's really all I've heard. I don't know if it's even going to happen, to be honest. I don't really have an opinion on that. I'm not quite sure. I don't think I'd be reincarnated if it was the end. I think I'd just be dead.
Okay, if the world was going to end, Taylor, on 12-12-12,
yes.
How would you spend the next 2 months preparing for it?
Dude, next 2 months, I would probably continue doing what I'm doing in terms of just, like, my friends and stuff. Like, I would just want to have deeper relationships with people and maybe do some things that financially wouldn't make any sense. But buy a sweet car, buy a new house. Maybe there is a chance for us to survive if it is the end of the world. And so maybe it's not the end of the world. That's the biggest lesson we can learn. We'll see what happens, but I hope everyone's prepared.
About the end of the world. I don't think it's actually going to end because when the millennium was coming around, everyone thought that the world was going to be very different, and it isn't. So it's just going to be the same thing. I don't think anything's going to change. I think people can see it as the beginning of something new, just like New Year's Eve.
I saw this funny thing. It said to go to Australia because you'd be a day ahead, so it wouldn't end. But I don't know if that's true or not. But I should do that. doing everything I've wanted on my bucket list, or just traveling the world and being with family and friends, going crazy. Probably stop going to school. Not.
Thanks to Taylor Coy, Lauren Rudd, and Sarah Fee for sharing their thoughts. How do scientists view the end of the world? TU physics professor Dr. Jerry McCoy tells us that there is no escape for humanity.
About 13.75 billion years ago, not to put too fine a point on it, the universe came into existence with what we now call the Big Bang, a very hot, very dense state, and it's been expanding from that hot, dense state, cooling out, spreading out ever since. Not only is the universe expanding, a discovery was made that the universe is accelerating in its expansion. And they're not only flying apart, but they're flying apart faster all the time. And that has enormous implications for the future of the universe. It's going to expand forever. See, in science, there's nothing supernatural that says what's going to happen. Everything is governed by the laws of physics. And evidently what's going to happen is our own star is going to become a red giant in about 5 billion years. It's going to expand out in its death throes, encompassing the inner planets of our solar system, including Earth, and we will actually be within the sun's girth. Now, in about 20 billion years, Our galaxy, the Milky Way, is going to go through an enormous collision with the Andromeda galaxy and ultimately collect up several other smaller galaxies until it's not just the Milky Way, but this super galaxy composed of, you know, a conglomeration of everyone who's in the neighborhood. Then, after about 100 billion years, all galaxies outside our own will have expanded beyond what we can see. All we will see are the stars of our own galaxy. Our ancestors will have no trace of the stars that we use now to infer how we got here and where we're going. And unless we leave them some archival evidence, they'll not know anything. They will not be able to figure it out from what they have to see. Over about a trillion year period, it's very likely that the Earth will spend its latter days wandering forlornly in the outskirts of this super galaxy. These are the conclusions of science, which admits no supernatural. Now, I'm a believer. That brings into play something that supersedes the authority of the laws of science. But without that, that's where the laws of physics take us. It's a very bleak, lonely future, one that ultimately life will be extinguished as far as I can see. I wouldn't begin to know how you would create archival records that would last billions of years. I'm thinking that a time capsule down at Bartlett Square is not going to get the job done.
Father Christopher Waters is the rector of the Anglican Church of St. Paul in Owosso.
There's confusion for Christians about the end times. We know the end times are coming. It's fairly obvious around the world. A lot of Christians are confused that they think the end times mean the end of the world, and, you know, the destruction of the world. Actually, for us, the end times means the great persecution, the great tribulation that's going to come over as evil dominates the world, as evil takes control, and evil will persecute the Christians and the Jews. Many will die, many will be imprisoned, many will be tortured. All of this has to come before the coming of Jesus. There is a war between the forces of good and the forces of evil, and surprise, surprise, good wins. And then after that, eventually in Christian tradition, there will come a time when the earth will be consumed and there will be a new heaven and a new earth, according to the book of Revelation. The war between good and evil ushers in good, who is Jesus. Jesus reigns for 1,000 years. At the end of Jesus' reign, all evil will be sent to its judgment and eternal torture. All good will remain with Jesus. And at that time, the earth will be destroyed. And yet God will not leave us without a place. And so a new heavens, a new earth will become our new home. There is only one way to avoid judgment, and that is through becoming a follower of Jesus Christ. John 3:16 says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son to the end, that all that believe in him should not perish, but have everlasting life." We're to rejoice, even in the midst of tribulation, because we have, in a sense, been chosen for that purpose. Great honor.
Kumar Gukul is a priest at the Hindu temple of Tulsa.
We have a four part of the end of the world. First, one is Krita Yugam, second is Treta Yugam, third is Dwapara Yugam, the fourth is Kali Yugam. Now currently is Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga is 432,000 years. We finished 56,013 years. It's currently going on. We have a 375 or 98.7 years in the world end. We have called Panjangam calendar. We believe that end of the world That time is called big pralayam, means too many naturalized. Fire, thunderstorm, hurricane, earthquake. The human body, not permanent. The life is permanent. It's going to reincarnation, reborn and reborn, reborn again. Our life is never die. The body is gone. When is the life also gone, the yuga is finished. When that finished, that I am is the end of the world. Very important to help other people, very poor people or handicapped or something. We have to help them and then we can more benefit get it.
Rabbi Yehuda Weg of Tulsa takes us back to the beginning.
If we're going to talk about the end of time, we really need to understand first the beginning of time. The world was created with a purpose. When that purpose is achieved, the job will have been done. Then we can talk about the end. We're not talking about an end of time, but rather the beginning of a new world, a world that has reached its purpose and its fulfillment, why it was created initially. Why would God have created the world? That's really the first question. He had everything, because he's God, except for somebody to be nice to. God is a good guy. You can't really be good and do nice things unless you have someone to do it for. God not only wanted to create us so that he could be good to us, he created us in a way that would allow us to participate in that process. And by creating a world that in its initial state is sort of raw, unfinished, and allowing us to bring it to perfection, then the good that we will receive will be the ultimate type of good because we have also participated. Despite popular notions, we're doing a very good job. The world has come to levels of goodness that even a short time ago I think were really unimaginable. One example would be the internal bloodless collapse of the Soviet Union. The fact that it no longer exists, and this happened in our times, is a miracle of biblical proportions. Here we talk about biblical prophecy about a time when swords will be beat into plowshares. We see that in front of our eyes. Most military uses today are to help people eat and exist. In the Jewish perspective, the Messiah is a person. It's not merely an era. Of course, it will be a new era, be a new kind of world. It will be brought about by an individual of flesh and blood who will lead us towards that, who will inspire the world in a way that says, that's the way I'd like to be. And that hasn't happened yet. The Messiah is not an honorary title. It's a job description. Whoever gets the job done, he gets the title.
Tara Moses is a Native American student at the University of Tulsa.
I was always told whenever the end times was come, whenever we made it come. Buffalo Jim from 1890-something, he was talking about how there was three signs. Like the first one being, we would lose our language. Already in his time, in 1890s, young people were already forgetting their native tongue, which is really interesting because, I mean, even now, it's getting fewer and fewer of how many people are fluently speak the language at home. And then the secondly is that we would lose the way that we would dress traditionally, like with our bright colors and our normal costumes that we do. And even now, especially, a lot of young people have been Americanized and don't want to wear traditional garb outside of like a yearly celebration and such. But even at those, you can go to any sort of celebration and there's still going to be some people in jeans and t-shirts. A lot of them are. And then the third sign was that we would lose how to make our traditional fire in the Seminole tribe, which honestly, I have no idea about that at all. And so then basically how I was told was that whenever we would start to lose parts of ourselves, then the Creator would come back and he'd start anew because we ruined it, so had to do it again. it's not as scary as it sounds. It's more of a new beginning, so to say, is that we would go back to whenever we were all animals again. And our creator, our grandfather, would come back for us. And then we would be guided into the new world. So you're not going alone. It's just whenever this world no longer has its original purpose, then we have to create a new one. The new beginning is a very positive thing because we're going back to how things should have been traditionally. Our ancestors and then with our spirit animal would come back and guide us. It's a very, very calm and soothing process. It's not like there's going to be earthquakes and volcanoes erupting. It's sort of just that everyone would get up and follow their ancestors through, just a walk into the new. I don't know what would happen to this old world. We weren't really told that, but that's the whole part of it, is that we're not supposed to know what happens. Just trust and know that we will be taken care of and we'll be guided through.
Sister Ellie Finley is the director of St. John Center for Spiritual Formation in Tulsa.
You know, I'm on Facebook with some other nuns and monks around the world, and most of us are highly amused by this end-of-the-world hysteria, because we had that trained out of us in the first 6 months of monastic life, because there's something fundamental to monastic training, whatever the theology is that goes along with this, that's really all about letting go of any kind of attachment that we have. Most of us cannot conceive of being happy if we don't exist. The idea of non-existence is one of an undercurrent, shall we say, of all our anxieties. We're control freaks, and we Americans are particularly control freaks. If we are going to do the very best we can to control things, think about it. We've got to be obsessed with the future. If we stay in the present moment, how are we going to know where we want that control to take us? We will not. So this makes it often very difficult for people in Western cultures, particularly that of the United States, to follow the kind of spiritual path that gives one peace of mind. It's almost as if those who are most caught up with concern about the end of the world have actually not made peace with their own mortality or with the impermanence of everything around us. The only way that they can make sense of it is for something cataclysmic to happen. We all need to reflect on our death and make peace with it, whether we die in the normal course of things or whether the end of the world takes us. It will really be irrelevant.
The mythos of the Norse is rich with images. Ragnar offers us a glimpse of these realms.
Ragnarok, that is the end days to the Norse. The great conflict of good and evil, the two forces, the gods and the fire giants, will have it out. The world tree will be consumed in fire, and it'll fall and ashes. And out of the ashes will come a new one. The destruction of Earth, the rebirth after. It's a stop. It's a stop along the way. Basically, the world starts to descend into pretty much chaos, the wolf time, brother versus brother. The major players in Ragnarok, you've got Surt, who's a fire giant king. Loki, who is also a fire giant. Loki has several children, of which Hel is one, the Fenris wolf is another, and Jormungandr, the world serpent, is another one. Now, in the end time, the Fenris wolf will kill Odin, and Jormungandr will kill Thor. Baldur, he's the fairest of the gods. Loki basically killed him, and so he went down to Helheim. There he stays until Ragnarok, and after Ragnarok's over, he comes back, and one of the ones that starts everything anew. The Valiant Slain, half of them go to Valhalla, and the other half go to Freya's Hall. The Einar in Valhalla, all they do is they train. They eat, they drink, they party, they fight. Big war, and everybody's pretty much dead at the end, and they come back and have a big feast and do it all over again. Through all eternity, they're training for the end days. So when Ragnarok happens, the two armies, the army of the dead and the chosen slain, will fight. Helheim, which is the underworld, basically. It is ruled by Loki's daughter, Hel, who is half-living, half-dead. Not really a bad place. In the Norse mythos, warriors slain in battle go to Valhalla. But if you don't die in battle, you don't get to go to Valhalla. You go to Helheim, which is where, you know, all the normal people go. They believe you go down to Helheim, and you are judged at the Well of Weird. Is at the base of the world tree, and you can come back. There's a rust red in Helheim, and there's a golden one in Asgard, which is the home of the gods. Both the roosters sound at once. I don't know what precipitates their call, but they definitely signal the end. Wake up, hey, the end is here.
TU student Abdullah Mahini and Allison Moore of the Islamic Society of Tulsa.
What happens before the Day of Judgment that are not necessarily supernatural? Honest people will be called liars, and liars will be called honest people. Time will pass quickly, and nothing will seem to get done. Fraud will become frequent in financial transactions. Buildings will rise higher and higher. Unqualified leaders of both government and society will become more common. The rich will become greedy and stingy. The rich will command the rest of society to be stingy. The land of Arabia will return to being a lush green place. Material gain will exceed spiritual gain. Murder will be taken lightly. Murder will be happening more frequently. Divorce will be common. Deaths will become sudden. Gender differences break down. Perjury becomes common. And these are some minor signs of the Day of Judgment, as according to the sayings of the Prophet Muhammad. It is said that all of these scary events will not happen to good people. Only evil people will remain to see these horrible things. Doing good and believing in God and understanding God's oneness and believing in the Prophet Muhammad, peace be with him, and all those sorts of things are the way to prepare, basically, for the Day of Judgment.
Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, he predicted 50 minor signs, and the majority of the scholars worldwide are in agreement that these signs have already occurred and that we are waiting on the major signs to begin. Some of those major signs would be the coming of the Mahdi, which is a worldwide Muslim leader, the appearance of the Antichrist, a worldwide drought, as well as the return of Prophet Jesus, peace be upon him. The Mahdi is a gentleman who is Muslim. We know his name is Muhammad and that he is Arab, and he will first be seen in Mecca and Saudi Arabia. When he comes, he will all of a sudden have the ability to pull all of the Muslim nations together. It is also a forerunner to when the Antichrist arrives. When the Antichrist is first seen in Isfahan, which is in current-day Iran, he will have a large army with him, and they will travel all around the world. He will appear as, you know, the false Messiah, the false God, and people will see his miracles, and he will also bring with him during this drought rain. The disbeliever, they won't be able to see that he has disbeliever written across his forehead. The Muslims will meet up with him in Jerusalem, and they will be fighting him. And then at that same period of time, Jesus will descend in Syria, Damascus, Syria, at the White Mosque, and will pray there in the mosque, and then will leave Syria and depart for Jerusalem with an army of Muslims. And once he gets to the gate of Lud, that's where he will first see the Antichrist. Once Jesus, peace be upon him, sees the Antichrist, that's it. Just by coming within his sight, the Antichrist will dissolve and die there. my personal faith in God is such that I believe that whatever happens to me is the best. And so I'm at peace with that. I can tell you that personally, it is not a time that I want to be here. You know, mass worldwide starvation is not something that I would like to experience. And it's almost like people know this is coming, especially Hollywood, because we've got movies that are right on topic with this subject. There's something interesting that Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, told the Muslims to do at the end of every prayer. And that is to ask God for protection from the Antichrist.
And finally, the Mayans. Dr. Bob Pickering is Director of Curatorial Affairs and Public Programs at Tulsa's Gilcrease Museum.
They were great mathematicians. They developed mathematics and calendrics so that they were able to develop calendars that work. Such a cultural tradition that's been marginalized today, was powerful in the past, has all of a sudden come to the forefront again because of some dates on these stone stela. The 21st of December, 2012. It's a date that shows up on, I believe it's Stela 25 at Isapa. That's an end of a Mayan calendric cycle. It does not say that it's the end of the world. There are cycles that are based on numbers and are based on astronomy. The Mayans believed that there were and have been multiple creations. After each creation, there's been a new creation. Now, in the Judeo-Christian tradition, we pretty much believe there was one creation, and whatever the end time is, that's it. The Mayans didn't believe that. They believed that we're probably in either the fourth or the fifth creation. And so what they're defining at the end of 2012, as I understand it, is the end of one of these creation periods. The Mayans were strong believers in natural cycles and that there were parallel human cycles. One of the interesting things about the idea of the Mayan cycles, the gods created different beings in each cycle, and the purpose of them creating beings was to ensure that there was balance in the world, that the gods were being honored, that sacrifices were being made, and if all these things were done, then things would be fine. They made essentially human-type figures out of different materials, and it wasn't until they made humans out of corn, interestingly enough, that what we would consider fully sentient human beings came about, and that's the current cycle. You know, in some parts of southern Mexico, Spanish is still the second language. Various Mayan dialects are still the principal language. And there are still specialists in astronomical knowledge. Now, we don't pay a great deal of attention to them anymore. The world has sort of passed them by. But among the Maya, there are people who are still carrying on these traditions today, who still apparently know how to do the count, know the rituals and things that go along with keeping the sun moving in the sky and keeping the world moving.
Eat, Drink, and Be Merry was produced in the studios of Public Radio Tulsa. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS, nor its licensee, the University of Tulsa. Our thanks to those interviewed for this program: Dr. Jerry McCoy, Taylor Coy, Lauren Rudd, Sarah Fee, Father Christopher Waters, Kumar Gukul, Rabbi Yehuda Weg, Tara Moses, Sister Ellie Finley, Ragnar, Abdullah Mahaney, Allison Moore, and Dr. Bob Pickering. I'm Frank Crystal. For good or bad, tomorrow will likely be another day. Make the most of it while there's still time.